May it please the court. Circuit court erred by not discharging the relator from probation.
Counselor, you might pull the microphone down a little farther. There you go.
Short. The sequence of events are undisputed. It's how the court interprets those events that's at question today. In 2012, November 2012, Mr. Sampson was placed on an SIS probation. In November of 2013, his probation was revoked, and he was sentenced to an SES probation. And then again, in July 2015, a revocation occurred for the second time, and he was sentenced to a 120 ITC. It is clear that he was sentenced to a 120 ITC under 559.115. The docket entry says it was a 559.115. The order releasing him onto probation says it was a 559.115. That is different than a 559.036 section 4 120, commonly referred to as CODs. When someone is sentenced to CODs, they come out automatically on the same term of probation. Under 559.115, a report is sent to the court, and at that time, the court reviews and determines whether or not to send the person on another term of probation or not.
But you're not alleging in your writ petition that that's where the court abused its discretion. Is that
no,
correct?
I do not believe that is where the court abused its discretion. The court abused its discretion when the report was sent to the trial court and the trial court put the probationer on a third term of probation.
But isn't the court required to do that under 559.115?
No, the court actually has the choice at that moment to execute sentence or to mitigate.
Well, he can't just execute the sentence. They have to have a hearing and find, and then the court could, after a hearing, execute. And there was no hearing conducted. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So the court didn't have the authority unless a hearing was conducted to execute the sentence under 559.115.3, right?
Correct.
So how did the court abuse its discretion by following that statute?
The court abused its discretion when it placed the probationer on the third term of probation. 559.115 does allow him to mitigate at the time of the sentence, and the court did not do so. Now, the state has argued that he has been placed on CODs.
But as you said, he wasn't placed on CODs.
He was not placed on CODs.
And in fact, there was a clear order in this case revoking his probation.
And sentencing him to a new five-year term of probation, yes. And that is...
Not at that point in time. They just executed the sentence pursuant to 559.115. It wasn't... The order of probation didn't come later.
So I believe the argument would actually be that on the time that he was revoked, that at that point he should have executed the sentence or mitigated it.
Well, I know that's your argument, but my point is that on that date, the probation wasn't imposed. The probation wasn't imposed until he successfully completed the ITC program.
Seems to me you might argue that he hadn't, that the trial court the second time around had no authority to invoke 559.115. But that leaves us where we just spent the last 40 minutes, which is with the trial court who had to exercise discretion to mitigate and never did.
I believe that is correct, Your Honor. If the trial court wanted to revoke under the second term of probation, then you have to do an ECC calculation in that situation. Brown v. Combs says that the court did not have the authority to put him on the third term of probation. And then once he was put on the third term of probation, if you wanted to revoke under the second term of probation, they could do so. But to do so, you would have to calculate all of that time that he was on the third term of probation. Now, the Board of Probation and Parole has taken that third term of probation and only applied ECC credits to the third term of probation. They haven't applied it to the second term of probation. So when you calculate how long the probationer spent on probation, from 2013 to 2015, he was on probation for 2 years. And then he comes out on the 120, after he was revoked and put on the third term, then he successfully completed probation for another 2 years. At that point, his probation would have expired. Now, I believe it is slightly confusing to argue that he had not been, or that when he comes out on the 559-115, I do not believe the court had the authority to put him on the 559-115, but when he does come out, the court has the opportunity to review his status at that time. And at that time, the court could execute his sentence and leave him in DOC. The court did not choose to do so. So at that moment, the court had no other option other than to discharge him.
But counsel, opposing counsel argues that ECCs are to be calculated by probation and parole, and probation and parole is not a party to this action. What's your response to that argument?
Well, 217703 does state that as the probationer, as his time accrues with time on probation and the time spent earning the credits, that he shall be discharged. And that discharge is from probation and parole and the trial court. So the trial court has the authority to discharge the probationer from probation when the calculations accrue. Now, the trial court could not.
But who does the calculation? That's the question, because I agree with you that the court is, under the statute, is ordered to discharge. But the question is, who's to do the earned compliance credit calculation? Is it the court, or is it probation and parole under 217703?
Well, it's probation and parole, but they do so under the order of the court. So the probation and parole calculates the ECC credits when the order is placed to put the defendant on probation. In this instance, the defendant was put on a third term of probation. So the probation and parole is actually calculating the order from the third term, and that order was entered in with no authority. So Board of Probation and Parole had no idea that they were calculating the credits incorrectly.
So should it go back to them for if this court were to hold that he was still serving the second term and provide that correct information?
Well, there was a representative of the Board of Probation and Parole at the hearing on my motion to discharge probationer, and they actually were there, and they said that they calculated from that time. The trial court had the
what time?
Third term of probation.
But because that's what they, because there was, the court had entered that third term, and so under the law, that's what they were supposed to do if that was a valid order. But if it's invalid, and so your argument is they had to calculate from the second term, is that right?
That is correct.
They haven't had the opportunity to do that yet.
Well, they could have done so, or the judge could have ordered them to do so that day when we had the hearing on the motion to discharge from probation. At that point, the judge determined that he could rescind the ECCs because when you send someone to a 559-115, your ECCs are actually rescinded. Now, 559-115 or 217703 does state that you can rescind credits when you send someone to a 559-115, but it also, in the next sentence, says when the suspension is up, they start earning credits the next month. So at that time, when the trial judge determined that he had rescinded those credits, he also determined that those credits, it should have been determined that those credits would continue to accrue as soon as he was released.
Would begin to accrue, you mean?
Begin to accrue. Mm-hmm. So when he comes out of 559 or 115, his ECC credits would start at zero, but he would still have that two-year term of probation that would be calculated. And then when he comes out of the 115, then he would start accruing each month for month at the end, which would lessen his
And what happened here instead of that?
What happened here was those ECC credits were applied to the invalid third term of probation.
When did the third term start compared to when he came out?
The third term of probation started in October of 2015.
And when did he come out of the program?
He came out of the program in November of 2013.
Probation actually started on November 10th, 2015.
The order was entered. I'm sorry.
And when is it you're saying it should have started? Because he had the right to, the judge had the right to rescind the credits when he sent him
to
the program.
He did. I'm saying when he came out of the 559115, the following month in December, he should have started accruing ECC credits.
And he did not here?
He did
not.
That's
what I'm trying to find out. When did he start accruing them?
He actually was accruing them, but during PMP's calculation, those accrual of credits was going to a third term of probation. So the calculation from PMP standpoint was in 2015, he was on probation.
You're saying it should have gone to the second term of probation.
If this court determines that he was still on the second term of probation, then those ECC credits should have been applied to the second.
And I note that do you know when the probation parole calculated the ECCs based on the third term of probation, whether or not they counted months where there was just a citation notice and not a field violation report?
Well, during the first year after the 559115, Mr. Sampson did not receive any citation notices. I do not believe he did receive a couple months where there were initial field violation reports, but I do not believe there were actually notices of citation. So I don't think that is an issue.
There is at least 1 month of where a citation on April 13th, 2017, a citation notice was issued, and I'm just kind of curious if you know whether or not probation and parole consider that month as an accrued ECC.
Did you say April 2013?
No, April 13th, 2017. I apologize, I misspoke.
I do not know if they actually calculated that or not, but when I did the calculations to see if he would be released, I did not calculate the notice of citation.
Counsel, my earlier discussion about the rather standard approach to revoking a first term, where you have a hearing, you find that a violation occurred, and in some period of time later, you decide what we're going to do about it, continue, revoke, extend. Correct? You recall that?
I do.
Is it your position that ECCs would continue to accrue after the violation has been found, the hearing held, the violation found, until the judge determines what the remedy will be?
I would say in that situation, the judge has the option of suspending the probation until he determines what his options are going to be as far as mitigating, depending upon how long and how far out he determines. In the example that you had used, it was he executes sentence and then a week later to give the person time to...
That was my good friend Judge Powell, but it's still a wonderful hypothetical.
So in that situation, the court makes the order that day that the person would come back in a week for the sentence to be executed. I believe that the order is actually put in that day with an execution day of a week away. I believe the further away from that time you get, the more unreasonable it becomes to execute someone's sentence.
Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. Here, Mr. Sampson was placed on a second term of probation by respondent, and after that second term, after he was placed on that second term, when he violated the conditions of his probation, the respondent was required to put him into a 559115 program unless Mr. Sampson consented to revocation. I think Judge Powell raised the issue of whether or not this was a revocation order or not, and whether or not the judge could revoke. Whatever the order said, whether it was a revocation or not, the respondent in this case, the only option he had was to send him to the 559115 program, and then according to 559-0364, once he successfully completed that program, respondent's only option was to release him to continue to serve the second term of probation.
But he didn't. That's the point. There's a specific order where the court revoked probation in this case, as opposed to the last case.
Are you referring to the order where he revokes probation and orders the 559 program?
Yes.
Right. Though the order said revocation, I don't remember if the order said, but I do know that the docket entry said revoke. that whether or not it was a revocation, respondent's only option was to send to the 559 program. He didn't have authority to revoke because of 559-0364.
Okay, I see your point.
Yeah, 559-0364, which is a different version from the last case we were discussing, requires the probation courts to place the probationer in the DOC 120-day program unless the probationer consents to the revocation. I don't believe there's any evidence in the record about whether or not Mr. Sampson consented in this case, so I don't think that's an issue.
But we're just to ignore the specific order where the court revoked probation and consider it just a CODS order.
Right. Under Brown, if the court exceeds its authority, then any part of that order that exceeded the authority is void and is severed from the rest of the order. That should be the correct result in this case. It should be that Mr. Sampson was continue to serve his second term of probation. Now, if the court disagrees, then Mr. Sampson's still not entitled to relief because he should never have been released back onto a third term probation, and the remedy is actually to direct him back to the Department of Corrections. The order imposing the third term probation would have been void in this case because he lost authority over Mr. Sampson after executing his sentence. The comparable situation would be in State X Rel Scroggins v. Kellogg. In that case, once the Court of Appeals held that once the sentence was executed, the probation court lost authority over that person after the execution.
So address the ECC argument, though, because I don't know if probation parole ever made a calculation with respect to the second probation term, but my calculation, even including notice of citations, the offender would be entitled to release from the second term of probation.
And I don't know if PNP has done a calculation as a second term either. That's part of the problem with this case because they're not a party. As we have noted during this argument and several times during the arguments yesterday, the calculation of ECC is a duty that's imposed on probation or parole. Now, they have the duty to calculate and notify both the probation court and the prosecuting attorney of what that discharge date will be. Here,
does the judge have a duty to leave someone in prison or leave them on probation even if they see under the law that they're entitled to release? And do they have to have the finding by probation and parole do they have to have probation and parole correctly figure the ECC credits and that ties their hands and they can't act, or do they have authority because they're required to release them with certain conditions are met and they find they are?
The 217703 doesn't tie a probation court's hands with release earlier than the discharge date. So regardless of what the earned compliance credit discharge date was calculated, a probation court could always terminate the term early.
Right. So they had authority to act whether or not probation and parole are here.
Respondent still has authority to act over Mr. Sampson's case. That's correct.
Because otherwise you would be saying that in every one of these cases, probation and parole has to be brought in as a party in every case and come up on every appeal and re...
Well, yes, the
statute... Have you checked back with probation and parole on that?
Probation and parole might not be pleased, but the legislature definitely gave this duty to probation and parole and requires...
But here they're saying the trial court improperly exercised their authority. And
correct,
so,
which is not
and
true.
And we can decide that without regard to whether probation and parole are here.
Well, that is true, but here the Mr. Sampson's still not entitled to relief because part of the duty to calculate is also the duty to notify the probation court and the prosecuting attorney 60 days before that discharge date. If you look at 217703 subsection 10, the notice requirement is a...
But why is defendant precedent responsible for making them do what they're supposed to do? That's not defendant's job. Defendant says, I'm entitled to release. I can't help it if some third party didn't do their job. Under the statutes, I get out or I don't get out, which...
Well, if the defendant is seeking early discharge, it is their responsibility to...
To make sure probation and parole does their job? Is there something that says that?
So probation and parole calculates the date.
I understand.
And so if the defendant disagrees with that date, then their remedy is to file an action against probation and parole.
But I understand you're saying they can do that, but don't they also have the remedy they pursued here and in all the other cases that have ever come before us, which is that they say the trial judge erred in figuring the term?
Well, arguably the defendant could go to the trial judge and say, we disagree with the calculation. Now, whether or not the trial judge agrees with the defendant or decides to adhere by the date that probation and parole has calculated is up to the trial judge. The trial judge is under no obligation to release the person from probation until the early discharge date, the calculated early discharge date has been reached. So the trial judge could agree or disagree with the defendant.
And I guess this goes back to the original issue, but probation really didn't do anything wrong here either, because they were calculating the ECCs. They were just calculating it based on the third probation term. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And who is it, probation and parole's responsibility to determine that that third probation term is void and really just continue to calculate it based off the second term of probation? Or can, I mean, probation and parole can't just ignore the court's order. Is that correct?
No, they can't. But this illustrates the necessity for litigation involving probation and parole to clarify what the law is and what the actual ECC discharge date is.
Well, and I guess going back to the original issue, is you say Brown says that the court's revocation order is void, but is it void or voidable? I mean, if no one challenged this, it's the, you know, tree falls in the woods and no one's there argument. I mean, if no one challenges this, this would have stayed in place. He would have completed the third term of probation, and it would always be there. Or are we to say that third term of probation never happened?
If the third term probation was void, then the earned compliance credit question is moot, because he should not have been earning those credits at all. His remedy is to return to incarceration in that situation.
And what about this interim period here?
The interim period, if he was on the second term probation? So if he's on the second term probation, then under the statute, 217703, he would earn compliance credits in accordance with the terms of that statute, and probation and parole would have to calculate that.
And if it showed he was entitled to release, or if it's obvious from his record where there's no citations, he's entitled to release?
So if it showed he was entitled to release, then he would need to, if his own calculation showed he was entitled to release, he would need to file an action against probation and parole.
Why can't he file an action with the court saying, release me because the record shows I'm entitled to release?
Well,
I mean, that's what every prior case has done, isn't it?
Right, but the problem with that is the probation court's not obligated until it receives notice from the Department of Corrections or probation and parole that the ECC discharge date is approaching. The 60-day notice requirement is a condition precedent to early discharge release. If you read 217703,
the court cannot act unless somebody else fulfilled that duty. So you could preclude a defendant from ever going in and asking for release by some third party not fulfilling their obligation?
No, Your Honor. The court can act. The court is not required to release the probationer early, but the court can always grant early termination. That's a separate question from whether or not they have gained early discharge under the ECC statute. So the court's hands are only tied after the earned compliance discharge date has been reached. But again, probation parole needs to give notice to the probation court and the prosecutor 60 days prior in order to give them an opportunity to act on the probation. Otherwise, without that notice, they are not entitled to be discharged under 217703. If there are no further questions, thank you.
I would
counsel, did your client tell the trial court that 559115 was the only option at the end of the when the violation of the second term occurred?
When 559115 was ordered in July?
It seems to me that you're alleging trial court errors now that nobody told the trial court of at the time. Would you agree?
I would agree. My client was actually pro se when the 559-115 was ordered. So he had actually filled out an application with the public defender's office, and we had denied him due to it being a probation case. And then he appeared in court on his own that day and did not ask the court to enter the public defender into his system. So no one was there to represent him at that time. So I do not know what exactly he asked the court when the 559-115 was ordered. I do have a response to the question about whether or not the court had the only option to put him on probation. And the 559-115 section 3.3 says that the court, if the court determines that probation is not appropriate, they can execute the sentence.
But he has to have the hearing first. There has to be, right? The court shall follow the recommendation of the department unless the court determines that probation is not appropriate. If the court determines that probation is not appropriate, the court may order execution of the offender's sentence only after conducting a hearing on the matter. Is that correct?
It is.
And no hearing was conducted.
No hearing was conducted. And at that time, the court would have determined that probation was not appropriate because it would have been a third term.
And I know your client wasn't represented at that point in time, but on November of when he was released on probation, he didn't object to that. Is that correct? I mean, obviously he didn't, right?
No, he did not object to that, Your Honor.
But that's where the problem happened. That's where the third term occurred.
And that happened without him even making an appearance into the courtroom. It is something in actually October of that year. The report from the 559 was sent to the judge, and the judge ordered his release on probation. And at that time, there was no action taken for him to make a statement that it wouldn't be accurate.
But all through 2015, 2016, and 2017, he never made an objection to still being on probation.
But could he waive his right to a hearing?
At which point?
When no hearing was held, but he was put back on probation, was he permitted to waive the hearing that otherwise was required?
But he would then the sentence would be executed.
Then the sentence would
be executed.
During the time that he was on probation, he was under the supervision of probation and parole. He was not actually represented. He was being told by the Board of Probation and Parole to follow these rules. You're on probation for 5 years. And I do not believe at that time that he was aware that he had this option or that he was on an invalid term.
Your opposing counsel seems to think that the action taken by the court on July 9th was void, but it just troubled that no one told the trial court that it screwed up. and if that's the case, that's why I'm troubled, because the trial court can always fix a problem early on, but it's a lot harder to fix a problem later, which is why we're here, I guess.
And I do agree that is troubling that no one brought it to the trial court's attention. And it's also troubling that no one brought it to Mr. Sampson's attention that he was on probation for 3 years, or that he technically, if he was still under that second term, would have been off probation back in 2017.